Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a spectacular weekend and a great chance for you to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. Then get out in your lawn or your landscape bed and get some things done. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. I couldn't agree with you anymore.
Well,
it's that time of year. Get something done. You know, we preach that every Saturday.
Yes, yes. And boy, we have really been working quite a bit around our house. And my wife Lisa's had a couple of friends come over and help her on the hill get a lot of that weeded. And I'm going to have to send you a picture of the cannas that have just exploded on the side of the house. And boy, they are beautiful.
I saw those.
And I can't believe how tall they have gotten. You know, Lisa is standing next to them, and they are probably 2 or 3 feet over, higher than the top of her head.
They are the only thing that I know of that's in northern Kentucky that's bigger than you. I'm just kidding. Yeah, they are. They're beautiful. I did see those.
And I had several people pose questions about how to care for them and what do we do with them, and we'll share that. Plus, our friend Dan, who we talked to last week, sent me some pictures of his peach tree. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And as we mentioned during the week, during our promo, taking care of everything in mid-August is extremely important.
Very essential. And this is the month where, you know, for those who really need to do some work, some serious work on their lawns, this is when it happens. This is when the rubber hits the road, the pavement, so to speak. This is where you really have to take it and make it happen, because you need to be ready to turn the corner at the beginning of September and sow grass seed. So we're going to talk about that a lot this morning, too. And also our good friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats are going to be joining us.
Yum.
It's football season, and we're going to talk about a little tailgating action.
Yes. Yeah.
And the Bengals, did they win last
night? They did win. They did win. And it looks like we're going to the Super Bowl this year, and we're going to win it.
Oh, you got a ticket for the Super Bowl. That's right. I forgot.
And I'll tell you this right now. You're always asking me to go out to Vegas with you on that Super Bowl weekend. If they get in the game, I'll go with you.
Did you hear that, Johnny? Right there. We'll pull that clip.
Yeah.
6:05. August 12th.
Yeah.
Okay.
But wait a minute. Hold on.
Yes.
Let me just say this.
No. You've already said it.
Well, I said it without getting permission from the missus.
Well, I could have said to you or responded,
Did you check with your wife?
Yeah, did you? You better go home and ask. Hey, can I spend a night with
Tony and a bunch of guys in Las Vegas on Super Bowl weekend? We'll probably just go to some of the buffets and stuff, honey.
I still think you need to, regardless, I still think that you should go.
I think I should, too.
Good group of guys.
Yeah.
And We know how to have a good time without getting into trouble. And everyone, the good thing about the group of guys is that you ever been with those groups? It's like everyone's trying to determine what they want to do and where we're going to go and do this and do that.
I thought you said a bunch of guys were going.
That's right. Women, I know where you're going with that. We just, either you're in or you're out. Yeah, you go your own whatever way. So,
exactly.
You would enjoy that.
I think I would, and I'm excited about the team. A lot of people attended down at the jungle, and it was great. I did watch the first half before I had to turn in early last night, and I just love hearing that Guns N' Roses Welcome to the Jungle theme song when the team takes the field, and it was so cool. I'm sure you remember back in the day when they first introduced that, when Guns N' Roses was first coming out and the Bengals were taking their march to the second Super Bowl. It was fantastic.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
You couldn't ask for a better song for the Bengals to introduce a team at the beginning of a game. So
it's exciting about that.
It is.
And, you know, we were talking, too, a little bit about, you mentioned about September being the perfect time to get grass seed down.
Mm-hmm.
So now is when you should walk out around your lawn and take a look at some of the areas. If you have some problem spots, get them addressed.
Start thinking about it. Map it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, we've been really fortunate, too. It's been a great summer.
I think
that it's been a great summer.
Yeah.
The temperatures have been somewhat, you know, they've been relatively favorable.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I kind of watch the upcoming, you know, the week every week and to see what the temperatures look like. And I think next Wednesday and Thursday, we might be pushing upper 80s, But other than that, mm-hmm. it looks really good. It looks favorable. We've had some timely rains, too.
We have. Yeah. And it's going to be gorgeous again this weekend. Lots of sunshine. Not bad temperature. High temperature only expected to climb up close to 80. And then 83 for tomorrow. A mixture of sun and clouds. But don't worry about the clouds. They're just there for decoration. And we're going to have the same on Monday and Tuesday. Staying in that area. And as you mentioned, not until Wednesday will we warm up. It'll feel more like August than, you know, a nice crisp day.
And, you know, there's so many things that really are just right around the corner. It's the fall season, which is my favorite time of the year. Mums are going to be ready before long. We'll start switching out some of our containers and window boxes and pots on the patio and front porch mm-hmm. with a fall motif look. And, you know, there's a lot of people, too, that have some nice-looking planters out there that they've been maintaining, and they're looking stellar. And there's some people that still are coming into the garden center, and they're like, ugh. You know, I need some replacements quick.
Sure.
Well, this time of year, it's not the easiest to find a lot of annuals that are still available for replacements.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're finding that to be the situation, don't worry about it, because just in a few more weeks, we're going to be going into the fall season, and it's coming faster than you think.
And let me ask you this, since you mentioned the fall, mm-hmm. when should we start planning our fall bulb scheme?
Usually October's the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of the garden centers here locally in the tri-state area that sell fall bulbs, and when we talk about fall bulbs, we're talking about those bulbs that you plant in the fall, and they have to go through a vernalization period, a winter, you know, cooling period, and next spring they reward us for all of our efforts that we put forth to putting those in the ground at this sure. time of year. So the surprise lilies are already in.
You know, I was just about to ask you about that because last week, and they're, I love them, but boy, it's brief with them,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But it's an interesting show, to say the least.
It really is. And I heard someone, I saw someone on Facebook post, they called them the naked ladies.
Yes, we're going to surprise you with a bunch of naked ladies in your front yard. How's that?
And surprise lilies. Yeah. I've also heard them referred to that. But we had a couple of them jump up
mm-hmm.
and just put on a gorgeous display. Poof,
they're wonderful to have. You're starting there for a while. It was, you didn't see them in a retail environment. And, you know, like just recently we started selling, you know, the surprise lilies the last couple of seasons. But before that, it was kind of tough to get your hands on the surprise lilies. And I was more or less telling most people, try and find somebody that you know that has them, because they naturalize so well
mm-hmm.
that it's easy just to lift those and propagate and take them home and plant them. Who was it the other day? Somebody had called in to the garden center and they were referring to the surprise lily, something that came up in their garden amongst their Rudbeckia and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I don't know how I got there. I never planted it and all that good stuff. And so I'm thinking, And the only thing that made logical sense was I had asked her, did someone give you the Rudbeckia, the black-eyed Susan? She said, yeah. I said, I bet you when they lifted that clump, they had some surprise lilies around, and you just happened to get a surprise.
And that was it.
That was it.
So enjoy the surprise.
Enjoy the surprise.
But they have a tremendous growth spurt, because apparently you don't notice them. Then they're three feet tall. Then they're 3 feet tall, and then they bloom.
That's why I like this industry. You know, when we talk about horticulture, that's when homeowners or people see things like that unexpectedly, or like, where did that come from? And all of a sudden something's in bloom. That's when it creates all the pizzazz and all the interest.
Sure.
You know? And then people are calling you up, or they're coming in, and what's that plant that I see?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's right up there at the hospital. It's blooming like pink. It's about 3 foot tall. You know, stuff like that. And I'm like, did you snap a photo of it? Or I'll tell them, go up into the yard, knock on their door, ask them what it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I said, you know what? They'll be flattered if you knock on the door and ask, hey, what is that? Where did you get that?
And we do have quite a few people that'll stop in their walking past our house and ask what those cannas are. And where we got them and how do you care for them. It's a great sparking conversation.
You know, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, do you leave those in the ground over there?
We do, yeah.
You're very fortunate.
Well, we got this. We'll share that story when we come back. We need to pause for a moment. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to share a little bit about what Lisa and I do with our cannas at our house. And as Tony mentioned, we're very fortunate, but this has worked for us year after year. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we went into the break, we were talking a little bit about the cannas that, and I'll send this picture to our producer, John, and we'll get it posted up on our Facebook page so you can check it out. But they're absolutely beautiful and have probably tripled in number over the last 2 years. And we have a lot of people ask us, do you take them out of the ground during the winter to winter them over? And we don't. And Tony mentioned that we're very fortunate. We got this from a friend of ours who unfortunately had passed in an accident. Her nickname was Olive. She had a place down in Cumberland and had these just beautiful cannas. And a couple of times when we visited, we talked about them and how she cared for them. And what she did, she shared her story, was that after the second hard freeze, she'll cut the stalks and then lay the stalks
Over top,
then cover that for the winter. And then after in the spring, take the plastic off, pull the old stalks off, and there are the shoots ready to come out. So we adopted that practice when we put them in the ground. And really, those came from another friend of ours, Jim Menzer, down in Cumberland, who gave them to us in a garbage bag. He goes, I'm tired of carrying these things around in my van.
Right.
I didn't want to throw them away. You can have them if you want them, and they've just been beautiful.
Yeah.
So, again, Lisa started doing the same thing a couple of years ago. After the season, she waited until the second frost, cut the stalks, laid them over top. Then we just threw some old mulch that we had over top of that.
Now, I like that. I don't want to interrupt you there, but you said plastic a second ago, and I'm thinking,
that's down in Cumberland.
Wait a minute. But you get down into the southern part of Kentucky, that's you're almost another zone south.
Hmm.
So we're like a 6A here, but you get down into that area and it's like a 7.
So what does that mean?
Well, it's a little warmer.
Right.
So,
Their
average winter temperatures are a little warmer than ours.
Uh-huh.
So that's just, what is that, 300 miles?
About, yeah.
Yeah.
It takes,
which is
a little over 3 hours
to get there. But I'm trying to get the positioning of your home. So I want to say that's kind of a southern exposure on that side.
It is.
So therefore, and it's even a little dry too. So it's not staying too wet during the winter months.
Right.
But you have that southern exposure with that sun radiating off the brick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So things are a little bit different there. So that's one of those little microclimates that we talk about often, around our homes. Last week we were talking about crepe myrtles. They can be a little sensitive as well. Temperamental, I should say, but, given how severe the winter is, but planting things up close to the house is a huge benefit with some of our plants. Cannas are one of those.
I love that.
Yeah.
A little microclimate there, because you're absolutely, they're in full sun. From the moment the sun comes up to it drops over the hill, it gets it all day long, and they love it. They absolutely love it.
And, you're waiting on them.
Yeah.
Early in the season, especially like, the spring months, when you're in April and you're in May, even at that point in time, trying to find cannas with a little bit of size is not the easiest of tasks.
Right.
But as we progress throughout the summer, the warmer it gets, the hotter it gets, all of a sudden they just burst on into their own. And all of a sudden you just got this beautiful plant, beautiful bloom. Those leaves are stunning. And then people are asking you, like you said, what are those? Where did you get those?
All the time. And so they really are in great shape this year.
Right.
And so we wanted to share that. Now, the rule of thumb or the philosophy, as you mentioned when we first started talking about these, is that you're supposed to take the bulbs out after the first hard frost, store them, keep them dry, and then put them back in the ground early spring.
See, in your situation, what I would do, and this is just me, since you've been successful leaving those in the ground over there,
yeah.
I would certainly do that for the most part. Mm-hmm. However, I would also lift some
yes.
to store to have as a backup.
Okay.
Just in case, yeah. you know, the winter is, you know, not kind.
Sure. And I know she's going to be doing that because we have to thin them out. They mm-hmm. are... they are so thick. We've had so much success for them. Plus, a couple of friends have asked if they could get starts on them. So she's at least as happy to share those.
But and those are tubers. You know, you talk about the starts. They naturalize. You're looking mm-hmm. for the tubers,
right?
And they're very easy to propagate and give to friends and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, too, a little tip for the future. Lift some of those, and then next year put a couple of those in some big containers, like whiskey barrels.
Oh, I saw this when you posted those last week.
Yes. Beautiful. So they're wonderful thrillers in a container, a large container, like the size of a whiskey barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing screams and says, hey, look at me, more so than a canna
yeah.
in that thriller, you know, kind of motif.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We were talking about our cannas there at the house, and we'll get that picture posted on our Facebook page. We also had our friend Dan ask a question about his peach trees. We're going to touch base on that, and don't forget, coming up at 8 o'clock, our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats are going to be joining us. We're getting you ready for the tailgate season when we come back.
Let's talk about your friend's peach tree. That was okay. very interesting, and we did not get the chance to go out there last week,
no.
but we have some things we can share with you.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In around the house. Playing a little air bass over
I
there.
I like that. You know, that's that stand-up bass. I wish, you're getting a kick out of that. I wish as I look back that I played a music horn.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. No, I own... two guitars. I've owned probably five of them in my lifetime, and I've picked it up three or four times, and I've just never really finished it.
But how many air guitars do you have in play?
I don't have any of those.
No?
No. But it's one of those things where I'm going, you know what? I really ought to finish this. I really ought to pick it back up and learn to play, or finish learning to play, but I just never get there. I think it's part of my ABCDHD or whatever that is.
Is that a TV station? Say that again. What is that part of?
See, that's a part of the disease. I can't say it again.
My my best friend, Rob Haney, his son can tear up the upright bass.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I like that. I like that instrument.
Sure. Tony, we have Rick on the line from Loveland. Rick, do you play?
Hello.
Hello, Rick.
Yes.
Do you play an instrument? No, I'm just kidding. Rick is from Loveland. He's got a son in Iowa. He's got a Fertiloom question for you. Hi, Rick. Thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Listen, would the Fertiloom products that we use here in Ohio work for my son-in-law's elevation in Cedar Falls, Iowa?
Yeah, they should work just as equally as well as they do here, as out there. There's no doubt about it. And what type of products are you thinking about? Are you talking about the fertilizer products for the lawn, or are you talking about the selective herbicides?
Three step. I want to give him a nice Christmas present. And his lawn, he's got a nice looking lawn, but mm-hmm. it could look better.
What type of turf he has or what he's using?
I don't know what he's using.
Yeah. For the most part, you know, the Fertiloom products work well on both cool season and warm season grasses, more so on cool season. And I know in Iowa, their weather's pretty much like ours in a lot of ways. So I don't see anything negative about using Fertiloom products out there. As a matter of fact, Fertiloom has sold all throughout the United States in various areas. It's when you go south is when things get really kind of, they change up a little bit, especially more so with turf.
Okay.
And when you push south, you know, you're looking at warm season grasses, and Fertiloom also puts out some products that are geared towards warm season grasses. So,
so I'm good.
Yeah, that would be a nice gift. Take it on out there.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks, Rick. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Last week, we had a friend, Danny O'Donnell from Villa Hills, give us a call and pose some questions mm-hmm. about his peach tree, and I'm thinking that he may have paid a little visit to my house over the course of the evening last night, because I go to leave to come to work this morning at 4 a.m. and I open the door and there's a bag of peaches hanging on my doorknob. So I'm pretty sure Senior was there and had dropped off some goodies, and we'll have to take a look at them.
That's awesome. That's better than coming home to a bag of fish on the porch. That's not good. And as a matter of fact, I can tell you a story about that. Someone left me a bag of fish one time.
I can't wait to hear that. So, and his question was about his peaches, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. The tree is overloaded, but they're either really small or he's not getting the fruit that he would like.
Right. You know, and I remember the call vividly from last week, and because one of the things that your buddy had mentioned is that peach tree was quite old.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, you know, peach trees aren't that long lived, and if you get around 15 years, give or take, or better, you're living well. So that was really interesting to me. And but the thing of it is that when we were talking about, you know, he's got it all propped up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, seeing the photographs and seeing the peach load on that tree, it's understandable why it's propped up.
Sure.
And that is a perfect example of not pruning your fruit tree, especially your peach tree, in a timely fashion annually. Because when we prune, what we're doing, we're pruning to manage the crop load as well. And in that situation, there are so many peaches on that tree. That's why, too, they're smaller than normal. So mm-hmm. you're supposed to thin that out and leave at least six or so inches in between fruit. But that tree is extremely overloaded, and it's obvious that you can tell he's got it propped up.
Mm-hmm.
What I would do is definitely remove a lot of those peaches.
Okay.
And do the same next year as things start to progress. And prune that late winter, early spring. And it's a touchy timing situation with peach trees, unlike when we prune apple trees. It's night and day, but what we're trying to do is open up the inside of that tree for a number of reasons. We want really good air circulation throughout. We also want to get better pollination. We also want to strengthen that tree for fruit production to sustain and hold that weight of the fruit once it starts to develop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where all that comes into play. And you don't prune too early because you're obviously, when you prune a fruit tree, you're going to cut out some of the bloom buds, which are what's going to be setting fruit.
Right.
And at the same token, you're also kind of keeping an eye on what Mother Nature's going to bring to us weather-wise, because as you know, some of the peach trees start to flush out and those blooms start to open up and you get a cold snap, you know, that knocks the blooms back. You don't get the pollination. You've already cut some of the bloom buds out. So you have a double whammy, and therefore sometimes it's very minimal fruit production. So I would start with pruning.
Okay. And I sent that picture to our producer, John. We'll get that up here in just a few minutes. You can check out
mm-hmm.
Danny O'Donnell Sr.'s peach tree.
Speaking of peaches, did you see my post on Facebook page when a couple of weeks ago I was up in New York?
Yes.
Hanging out at, went on down the subway tracks to Union Square Market, which is a beautiful market, by the way. Mm-hmm. I have so many photographs I would love to share, and I will as we progress and time goes by, especially a guy that had this awesome mushroom display. He had some mushrooms that were vivid, various colors that were just interesting, to say the least. But we're talking about peaches, and have you ever heard of the donut peach?
I have not, but you had me from the word donut.
You like donuts.
I'm
glazed.
Interested.
Well, these aren't glazed peaches because they're called donut peaches. And I'm really not familiar with the donut peach. But what was interesting, the reason why I took a photo of it is because they have a very unique shape.
Mm-hmm.
They're squatty. And, you know, they almost resemble a donut in a lot of ways, hence the name. And I didn't buy a pint. I wish I would have.
Mm.
You know, just to
try
it.
Opportunity missed.
Yes, missed big time. Mm-hmm. But what was funny about the photograph, it was like, do they call them peaches or peaches?
Oh, yeah.
And they did. They had donut peaches on one sign, and then another peach area, they had peaches. So which is it? Peaches or peaches?
Gotcha.
But nonetheless, I regret big time that I did not buy a pint just to try those.
Gotcha.
But I've read that they're delicious.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Let's focus our attention on the lawn, because this is the time to take care of it in such a way, if you need to do a little bit of renovation, now is the time to start that project.
We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground today. Don't forget our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats are going to be joining us at 8 o'clock as we get you ready for the fall season. Tailgating, just great food. And I have to admit, well, you know, we're going to take a little business here because we were supposed to share our care packages with John, our producer. And I know mine didn't last more than a couple of days. Did you give him some of yours?
John, you didn't get those? Are you sure? I left them in a cantina for you. Somebody else must have taken them out of the refrigerator.
So it'll be, if they were there, I'd have taken them because it was that good.
Well,
but they'll be here at 8 o'clock. Yeah.
Well, speaking of, I posted on Facebook, and we'll talk more about it later, that I was jonesing for a cottage butt, and that was the last of my care package, and I got that bad Oscar out earlier in the week. You know, it was a little cool and rainy, and I thought comfort food, and we had picked some fresh green beans, and nothing better than a cottage butt and a crock pot with fresh green beans and sliced tomatoes.
That's exactly what happened in our house. Somebody dropped off some fresh green beans. Lisa snapped them up and then got that ham out, and we had green beans and ham for a couple of days. It was awesome.
Oh,
so we're
I can still taste
starting to get hungry.
I know.
Let's start talking about our lawns, because now's the time when you really got to set yourself up to be ready for to repair and get some new seed down and
absolutely fix it. And the reason why I still want to talk about this, because people are going to bring this up sometime in September, the latter part of September, and more so than you think, even going into October. And it's like, guys, we've been talking about this back in August.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're using some of the selective herbicides, when we talk about selective herbicides, these are the type of herbicides that we're trying to eliminate clover. In your case, the creeping Charlie, just a number of things that might be plaguing you in the lawn. And when you're using selective herbicides, and we talk a lot about Fertilum's weed-free zone, which is my go-to, you know, we need to allow that to take effect after we apply it. And there's a period of waiting before you can sow grass seed.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about the optimal time to sow grass seed being in the beginning of September or any time in September, we have to take into account when we use selective herbicides, there's at least a 14 to 21 day, depending upon the product, always read the labels when you can sow grass seed. So, for example, it's August 12th.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. So that gives us a couple of weeks. It gives us that time period. If we apply, you know, while the temperatures are still favorable now, which is to our benefit. All right, by the time everything takes hold and things die off, and we rake that out, it's the beginning of September.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we're putting emphasis on this, because it's not difficult to grow a nice, beautiful lawn. It's all about timing.
Yes, and paying attention to it. You say that quite often. It's just a little bit of preventative maintenance goes a long way.
It's timing. So keep that in mind. And also, if you're looking to do a total lawn renovation, August is the time to do it. And that's when you want to spray a non-selective herbicide on your lawn. Because when we talk about non-selective herbicides, those are herbicides like Roundup, Kills All, that will kill or damage anything that it primarily gets on.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time that that's all done and ready, you're ready to turn the corner, go into the month of September, and sow grass seed. And that will give you all of September, all of October, and by that time, you're able to put a couple of mowings in October on that newly sown lawn, and it hardens it off, it sets the stage, and it goes through the winter relatively well. And then next year, you know, you're going to see that lawn starting to grow and develop and strengthen. And it's all about timing. And talking about the lawn, now's the time. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries right now, because a lot of us are still, you know, we're getting in new plant material. As a matter of fact, yesterday we got in a load from Willow Way. I know on that same truckload, the guys down at Baton's, they got a bunch of stuff. So there's still fresh nursery stock coming in. And when you're visiting your nurseries, think about the fall plantings. But at the same time, I want you to start picking up or thinking about your lawn and pick up that Fertilum three-step program.
I was just about to ask you about that. You were talking about timing, and temperature is very important as well. But when do we get ready to put down the next step?
The beginning of September. I always like to put down that first fall application around Labor Day weekend. Okay. It doesn't have to be Labor Day weekend.
Around. Yeah.
Or any time during the month of September. We're going to talk more about it as we get it towards the latter part of the month and into September. But if you do it around Labor Day weekend, the beauty of it is that you're going to have the opportunity to see your lawn really green up. And once those temperatures start to cool down a little bit in September, we get some timely rainfalls or you're watering, it's a beautiful, deep, rich green. It's going to really strengthen your lawn. And going into the fall season, the two fall applications from Fertilum, it's the orange bag, it's the Lawn Food Plus Iron. You're going to put that down around Labor Day weekend, and then you're going to come back and put down the second fall application sometime mid-November. This is the time frame. It's the best time of the year to get into the Fertilum three-step program or any type of lawn fertilization program. The fall is the most crucial time of the year when you need to fertilize.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Denny the Birdman on the line. We're going to come to him right after the break and talk a little bit about our feathered friends. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking a little bit about lawn, but we have Denny, our Birdman friend, on the line. Hi, Denny.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing all right. Thanks for hanging on.
Good morning, Denny.
How y'all doing?
Doing okay. Right. You're and your daughter's Nicole, correct?
Right.
Tell her I said thanks. I did get the photos that she sent of some of your summer projects this year.
Right.
You've been busy.
Yeah. I had a septic line replaced.
Uh-huh.
And where they did all the digging up and everything, I'm putting in a 3B garden, as I call it, for birds, butterflies, and bees.
Mm, yeah.
And the rest of it, I'll be weed killing and grass sowing. So
there you go.
So it's kind of a timely subject because you're all talking about doing your yards and stuff. So that's what made me think about it, where I can take August and kill off all the weeds and everything, and then in September I'll be planting my grass seed and stuff.
You're ahead of the game, and that's so important. And taking advantage of the weather, the temperatures we've been experiencing here in the month of August, which is unheard of for the most part.
Right.
So favorable, you know. And a lot of people, I know they're going to think they're going to be relatively somewhat happy with the way their lawns look now. That's because we've had some timely rainfalls, and everything's green.
Yeah.
But there are some issues with some lawns. I see it. And just I'm trying to encourage people to you know, take advantage of this opportunity. So
I got all my supplies this week and stuff. I got my weed free zone for killing the weeds and stuff, and I got some grass seed and things like that. But what I'm basically doing is taking out some more grass so I don't have to cut it next year.
That's a good idea.
That's why I'm making the garden and stuff, because that way I won't have to cut that grass where I put the garden in.
So. I like it.
But now, I'm like Ernie there. I got a big hill in the backyard here, and I cut it every year.
Oh, it can't be big as Ernie's.
Well, no, it's probably not as big as Ernie's, but it's all hill anyway, you know. Yeah. So, you know, the less of it I have to cut, the better I like it.
I hear you, brother.
So, but have you noticed anything about your hummingbird feeders being empty quite often?
Well, you know, we have had quite a lot of hummingbird activity recently. And, yeah, Lisa just the last week had to take it down and clean it and refill it.
Yeah. Well, there's also here at the house, I've been having a lot of downy and hairy woodpeckers hitting my hummingbird feeders.
Oh, I hadn't noticed that.
Really? Keep an eye on that. Why would that be?
Well, they're nectar feeders,
okay,
for one thing. At least ways that's what the naturalists at the parks tell me.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, but it just seems unusual this year that I've had so many of them hitting my hummingbird feeders.
I've never seen one go to a hummingbird feeder.
Well, up until this year, I had maybe one every year, you know, that would come back and hit my hummingbird feeder. But I guess he's told his friends or something, but he has three or four of them now coming up to my hummingbird feeders, and I got to fill them up like every 2 or 3 days.
How interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, they kind of spill it out and lick it off and stuff like that. And, you know, it makes them a little sticky, but they still got to be filled, you know.
Sure.
Like Ernie, you know, I've got a lot of hummingbirds around and stuff, too. So
right.
It's kind of funny to see a woodpecker on one side of the hummingbird feeder and a hummingbird on the other side. So
will the hummingbird protect that? Will he kind of, like, fly around the woodpecker? And
yeah, he tries to get him to fly away and stuff, but the woodpecker just kind of looks at him like, eh, I'm here. I'm going to take a drink. I'll leave when I want to.
There you go. I know Tina was out working last night or late yesterday evening on our deck. We've been getting a lot of activity with hummingbirds, and where she was hanging out reading, the hummingbird didn't like where she was because she was too close to some of the lantana.
Yeah.
And she goes, Tony, I think this hummingbird were kind of trying to muscle me out. But they are. They're very protective and territorial.
Yeah, that's what I've been finding about my birds, butterflies, and bees garden. You know, I've been hanging around there and planting things and stuff, and they keep coming up and buzzing me myself, you know. I've also planted some lantana, like you said, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was one of the plants I planted and stuff. I planted some butterfly milkweed and some dill, because I heard that that's a good host plant for butterflies.
Oh, yeah.
Big so time. I got plenty of dill in there and stuff, so.
Rue hopefully is,
next
too.
Year it'll be pretty good, so.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, you said you're going to, do you have a beehive now, Denny, by chance?
No, I don't have a beehive, no.
Okay.
But I do have bees in the yard.
Got it. You know, now next year, I was just talking with Tina, my wife, the other day about this. You know, I think next year I'm going to experiment with a beehive.
Yeah, I've had friends that had beehives and stuff in the past, but they've lost their hives.
Yeah.
In recent years and stuff, and they keep trying to get them back, but I don't know if they've had any success this year or not.
I'm going to give it a whirl. So, and I'm a novice at beekeeping, so Ernie and I are going to look for somebody or one of the beekeeping organizations here in a tri-state area to step in here and have a little conversation with us in the studio about that, because I'm really interested in doing something of the sort. So,
well, I'm sure if you go on the internet, you'll find somebody that will be able to talk to you about them.
Yeah. And I kind of want to get a little experience with a professional or somebody that's got experience with beekeeping before I step into it. You know,
yeah, I understand that. That'll save you a lot of stings.
Maybe. So, real quick, before I let you go, your daughter Nicole posted one of your planters on our Facebook page.
Yeah, Michael.
Yes, very artistic. So let's cover that real quick, because I want to know, I know that you have is that a canna growing out of the back tank?
Yeah, it's trying, but it's not doing too good. I was going to ask you about that.
Give it some time. And I have to ask you, I guess there's a little symbolic meaning behind, is that a duck in there?
Oh, that's my quacky duck rain gauge.
Oh, it's a rain gauge, okay.
Yeah, he's holding a rain gauge.
Okay. And I also...
It's called a quacky duck rain gauge.
Okay. I like it. And I also saw on the other side of the tank, there's a lighthouse.
Right. And at night, that comes on, and it spins around just like a lighthouse does.
Perfect. I like it. Very clever.
It's kind
How
of
fun.
Neat, you know, something different. Well, so I always go for the quirky and quacky and weird.
I can tell.
You know, I've got like 5 bathtub planters that I use, and now I had my toilet replaced this last summer and stuff, so I used it too.
So. Well, great stuff there, Denny, and make sure you stay in touch with us. We appreciate the call.
Yeah, I'll be talking back to you. After I get my grass growing and stuff like that, I'll send you some more pictures.
All right. Have a good weekend, Denny.
You do the same.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to take a break for a minute. When we come back,
we're going to continue that topic, just as Denny stated. He's all ready and prepared. I want to encourage you to go out there to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up the necessary supplies, and we're going to still stay in the lawn.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Keep in mind, coming up at the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined by our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats, Paul and David, and going to talk to them about some great opportunities you have to enjoy their fantastic food. And we're also spending some more time in the lawn, because now is when you make or break next season.
Big time. Yeah. You know, it's and that was a great testimonial from Denny, you know, the bird man or bird guy.
Yeah.
And over there on the west side. It's all about being prepared, getting out to your local garden centers and nurseries here in the tri-state area, and picking up the necessary supplies that you need to make everything come together and set up and have that picture-perfect lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And now is the time to start working on some of those troubled areas, meaning if you have to bring in some topsoil from somewhere, that's one of the first things here I really want to point out to you. Make sure that you get a really good quality topsoil. Don't just settle for anything that's, you know, cheap or, yeah. you know, don't be price sensitive when it comes to good topsoils, because when you start bringing in topsoil and you're not sure if it's their origin or where it's from or who's really selling it that's reputable, you're going to end up with a lot more weeds in that area where you put that topsoil down than you are with the grass that you sowed, mm-hmm. the seed that you sowed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's first and foremost. I can't say that enough. Buy a good quality topsoil. Hafner's and Sons, check with them. There's other places, too, throughout the tri-state. That's where you need to start first. So you need to grade out some of those bad areas that are kind of uneven, unlevel, those situations. You know, level that out. Allow that soil to kind of settle a little bit before you start to work it. And when you're using soil like that, it makes it a lot easier when you sow grass seed. Also, keep in mind when you're sowing grass seed, this is so important. Don't bury it deep. You know, how I like to sow grass seed, once I prepare the surface of the soil where I'm working in some grass seed, you know, the thing that's the most important thing that you need to take into consideration is good soil to seed contact. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get it,
yeah.
that seed's not going to really take, and it's not going to really, you know, root in well enough and give you that lawn you're trying to establish.
Sure.
If it's compacted, don't even throw the seed down on it, because it's more than likely to wash away when you water or it rains hard. You need to loosen that soil up and get that good soil to seed contact. Also, I can't emphasize this enough. A starter fertilizer. Fertilum makes a great starter fertilizer for your newly sown grass seed. It's got phosphorus in it. That's what really helps with root development. You need to go there as well. So those are steps, you know, the topsoil, grade things out. Good quality seed, a tall fescue. One we've been talking about often here in recent months is Fine Lawn H2O. This used to be formerly called Fine Lawn Elite. It's a wonderful tall fescue. I use it personally. Fine Lawn H2O now is, you know, it's this particular seed has turf grass water conservation certification. And it can save you, you know, a couple of dollars, you know, because it's more drought tolerant. But at the same time, you're going to get really good quality turf. It's going to possess that nice look, the deep green look, disease resistant. And think about it. You know, when it's, you know, you're going to water less, use less fertilizer. Look for a Fine Lawn H2O at your local garden centers and nurseries this fall.
Now, what's your philosophy on covering the grass seed with hay?
Well, that was part of when I was talking about when you sow grass seed. I like to put the topsoil down or whatever it is I'm working with, or loosen up the soil to get the good soil to seed contact.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take a leaf rake and I scratch it in, and then I just barely throw a little bit more over it.
Okay.
Okay. Usually an eighth of an inch or give or take. You bury it too deep, it's not going to germinate, mm-hmm. or you're not going to be as successful. But I think when you go, you know, once you sow grass seed, going back to your question about strawing, or putting straw over it, you want to do it at about a 40 to 50% coverage ratio. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I want you to be able to look down and still see soil surface. A lot of people just layer straw on, and even if they have excess straw, that's like, well, I'm going to go ahead and put it out there on the lawn.
Sure.
But the thing of it is when you blanket it so thick, you're preventing light, you know, air, moisture from really getting to that soil surface to do what it needs to get that grass seed to germinate.
What is the, I guess, what's the principle behind covering it?
Well, the real principle is this. It helps with moisture retention.
Okay.
So when you sow grass seed, what you're going to do until it germinates, you're going to water it every day. you're going to take your garden hose out there with a nice nozzle and kind of give it that rain mist. I mean, don't gun it.
Right.
And you don't want to really wet it down to the point where seed starts kind of, you know, meandering and following the water trail and washing away. Just like a nice, easy, steady rain. But with the straw, what that's doing, when you do that in the morning, throughout the course of the day, the straw is helping with moisture retention. It's not really keeping birds out from eating your seed.
I was just about to ask that.
It's, you know, that's a lot of pecking. Unless you have...
it's a lot of birds.
Yeah, unless you have a flock of, you know, blackbirds, starlings coming in, and all of a sudden they're all over the lawn, go out there with your pelican. That's all I'm going to tell you. But, you know, it's birds are more apt to come in and take the straw and roost with it or build nest with it and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, straw is there for a reason, and it's moisture retention,
gotcha.
Especially when it's still warm, you know, in the, during the fall months.
So you need a little light to get through there. You need it to hold a little moisture in to help the seed.
Yeah.
And then when do you determine it's time to remove the straw or the hay?
Well, usually that's after you mow two or three times.
Okay.
And at that time, you know, if you have a bag for your mower,
mm-hmm.
you know, or at least use your mulching mower to just turn that up. That's
right.
Okay.
Right.
But after a period of time, you really don't want to rake that out.
No.
You know, a lot of times you're raking too hard.
It right out.
Then you're pulling the newly sown seed as it's developing the turf. It's still not rooted in that well. When you rake it, you're pulling it out. So you're thinning it out again. So if you have a mower that you can just use your mulcher, you know, setting on, you can certainly do that. Or if you have a bag, that helps get some of that up and then opens it up and allows more air and oxygen and sunlight to get through the newly sown seed and that turf as it's developing. And using that starter fertilizer from Fertiloom, it should just take off like gangbusters. And then as you turn the corner next spring, you're ready to progress on and move on and strengthen that grass. A beautiful lawn is all about a healthy lawn, a thick lawn. And that's going to keep most of your weeds out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key.
Right.
So it's right there, getting it established. Now's the time to start working on it.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
You know, we were talking a little while ago how nice the weather has been and how we've had some timely rainfalls and so forth. We've had a little bit of moisture this year,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of leading into the segment, What's Bugging You? And we're going to talk about that when we come back out of the break.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I've been covering a lot of ground today, but there's always one of those things we encourage you to get out and enjoy your yard, your landscaping. But there's always, always something there to make it uncomfortable.
Something pesky, you know. And you okay?
Yeah.
You know, it's backyard barbecue season, right?
It is.
And it's tailgating season as well.
Yeah.
And you may not be the only one planning a feast. That's all I want to tell you.
You know, you might be on the menu.
You might be on the menus, right. And mosquitoes are active, and they've been chowing down big time. I think they have. I don't know whose appetite is bigger, yours or the mosquito.
Probably mine.
And I'm going to tell you this. Before you go out and you go out and fill up your shopping cart or start purchasing citronella candles, it's important big time to know and understand the enemy. What do you think? You got to know what your enemy's all about. It's like the Bengals, you know, they have a game plan. You got to have a game plan. So, you know, talking about the game plan, here are maybe some do's and maybe some don'ts that you want to think about.
Sure.
What do you typically try and do, Ernie, before we get started?
Lather up with bug repellent.
I like it. Deet, you deet up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deet's not bad, but deet's not good either, but it works. But some of the things you might want to try and do, mm-hmm. all right? Blowing mosquitoes away. Not like...
with a flamethrower?
No. You know, think about it. They really don't fly too well when it's windy.
Okay.
Okay? So they're not that good of flyers when there's the least bit of wind.
Oh, I gotcha.
So have you ever noticed when you have a couple big fans blowing around you or some ceiling fans, it kind of keeps them at bay?
Yeah.
You know, okay, so that's one thing that you can do. Also, if wherever it is you might be having a grill out or a backyard activity taking place, you know, out in the open where, you know, you got some breeze.
All right. Good idea.
So those are some of the things you can do. Try and pick a breezy spot for your summer outing. Okay, that really helps. I've also found that, like I said, the overhead fans, you know, those are beneficial, and even some of the plug-in fans.
You know, that's interesting you say that, and I didn't really take notice, but we have an exterior on our porch, an exterior ceiling fan, and it's never as bad when that fan is on.
Right.
Huh.
So think about using, you know, utilizing those ceiling fans. Those are great to have. If you don't have one, you have an outdoor area where you can mount a ceiling fan. If it's on a pergola or something, they make those where they're waterproof, you know, they're weatherproof. You can install those outside.
Love that.
And, you know, the plug-in fans too. You know, mosquitoes usually, they fly low to the ground. Okay, they're, you know, when you're out in the yard, you know, you got those areas that sometimes in the yard you have those low spots and there's that moisture and all that stuff. Those are breeding havens. Those are breeding spots that mosquitoes love, anything that holds water. But typically they fly close to the ground.
Okay.
So, you know, using those plug-in fans whenever you're out on a deck or the patio, you know, get them kind of pointed downward. And if you have the ceiling fans, that's even a big plus too. So that breeze, they don't fly very well in wind.
Okay.
So that's one thing that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad choice at all.
No.
As I just said a second ago, you know, citronella candles and the coils and, you know, all that good stuff. You almost, in my opinion, you have to be between, that has to be between you and the mosquito.
Yeah,
the smoke.
To create that barrier.
Yeah. Or act as a deterrent. You know, that's just my two cents worth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even the tiki torches that sit a few feet off the ground, I don't know if they're really always that effective. Everyone likes the ambiance that you get from the tiki torches. Keep those around. There's no doubt about it. They just give you that outdoor
feel.
Yeah. You want to hang out. But with all that, in the yard or on a deck or on a patio, I've still been bitten by mosquitoes.
Oh, sure.
So that in itself tells me, does it really prevent mosquito bites? Now, chime in anytime.
I'm fascinated by a couple of things about them learning or them flying low to the ground, that sort of thing. The wind thing also caught me by surprise, but it makes perfect sense. You know, set a fan out there and create a little breeze. That will help.
You know, these are just some do's and don'ts, you know, and can I say it's all proven? I don't know. Everyone has their own remedy.
Oh, sure.
And by all means, feel free to chime in. If you got something on your plate there, Ernie, you want to add to this, bring it on. I have rhino skin. I'm okay. I can take it. But, you know, another thing, too, I want you to think about this. When you're outside, just try your best to kind of relax. And, you know, for example, carbon dioxide, when you're breathing heavy or you just, you know, you're busy in the yard. You ever notice when you're really busy and you're active and you're mowing the grass?
You don't get bit then.
Well, you are.
Yeah.
You know, you're out there and you're smacking stuff off of you. You know, carbon dioxide, CO2, is mosquito cologne.
Is it really?
They love, they gravitate towards carbon dioxide, CO2. That's the primary thing that mosquitoes search for when they're trying to identify food sources.
Maybe I cut the grass faster than the mosquito flies.
Oh, yeah. You know, think about it.
That's not true.
When your heart rate's elevated, we don't want you to get your heart rate up there and elevate it in such a way, Ernie. You know, your body's going to produce more CO2, making you a mosquito magnet, not a chick magnet.
I haven't been a chick magnet for a long time.
Oh, come on. You don't talk like that every day. Yeah. It's like, do you think she likes me? Do you think?
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're covering what bugs you. What else bugs you? What about the mosquito, Tony?
Well, you know, something else that you can do. Now, here's something I find comical sometimes. Now, and I don't know if there's any truth to this or not. You know, there's people that will say, eat certain types of foods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one in particular that stands out, garlic.
I was just about to say garlic.
You know, I don't even know if there's any truth to that, if it really works or not.
Keeps the vampires away.
Keeps me away. You know, if you're going to hang out with some friends some evening or a backyard outing, and you're going to get all garliced up, I don't think your friends are going to want to hang around with you. So, you know, I don't know if you can really rely on certain foods or certain supplements or anything of the sort.
Sure.
To help protect you against mosquitoes biting you. Another thing that you can really do is, I think it's really about clothing sometimes. Tighter woven clothing to, you know, keep mosquitoes from getting underneath. Or,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you're wearing something loose or you're like, they're still biting me.
Gotcha.
But I think tighter woven fabric is a great protective kind of thing that you can do. And, you know, something else, it's, you know, talking about fabric, I understand that the lighter color fabrics that you wear, mosquitoes aren't as drawn to it. So apparently the darker the color of the fabric, the more activity that you might see around you with mosquitoes flying.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, these are just some things I've kind of honed in on or heard people talk about. You know, do they work or do they not work? But I know that wearing protective clothing is of the essence. And also, do you have a bug zapper?
We do have one. Yeah, over at Pappy's place.
Do you find that those are effective?
What's
your take? Give me your spin.
No, it's sort of interesting to hear it go off once in a while, you know, that, like, oh, that was a big one.
Hey, no. Only in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Only in Kentucky. But, you know, apparently, too, like, the ultrasonic devices, bug zappers, they're really not that effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably more entertaining than anything.
Sure.
Since you just said you like to hear that sound, so.
Ooh, that was cool.
So, you know, that's one of the things that you can, you know, seriously consider. You know, are they effective or not? Do you really need a bug zapper or not? Maybe for the entertainment. As far as a deterrent, I don't know. And last but not least, you said this in the beginning of the conversation. You know, I have found that some of the mosquito sprays that, you know, we got to be careful when we talk about DEET. There's no doubt about it. Because, you know, DEET can be harmful. We know that. But it's also very effective as well. And using it as it's labeled, only as it's labeled, you know, I think you're going to find the best protection. I mean, there's times when that's what I will end up doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it works well.
Sure. 749-D105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're going to pause for a moment. Tony, when we come back, we have Jane on the line. She's got a question for you about a trumpet vine, oak leaf hydrangea. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Jane on the line from Dayton. She's got a couple of questions about a few plants. Hi, Jane. Thanks for hanging on.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How are you?
All right. How are you?
Pretty good. I was calling. Tony, we bought a trumpet vine, flava,
mm-hmm.
two of them, to trail over our trellis.
Uh-huh.
And both of them are growing very well, but mm-hmm. they haven't started blooming yet.
Well,
now it says midsummer to early fall.
Yeah, and the fact that you just planted them too has a lot to do with it. Let them get established. And they're usually prolific bloomers. And, you know, sometimes you might not see them bloom for a couple seasons, too. That's
oh,
not
okay. That's what I was wondering.
That's
maybe
not unheard of either. So that can also be the occasion. And don't worry about it. If you ever want to shape it and prune them, too, you do that late winter, early spring, because they will bloom on new growth.
Okay.
And a lot of times when you buy things in the nursery, always keep this in mind. Nursery stocks always continuously arriving throughout the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, like major, you know, big growers, you know, they're always pruning things back and shaping things in the nurseries before they ship them out into the retail sector.
Okay.
So a lot of times, you know, as things are progressing, they may have been cut back just to keep them in bounds, and they may have pruned back some of the blooms, too.
Oh, okay.
So,
because they're growing really tall over the trellis. I mean, they've almost met, you know, at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And on both sides, they're, you know, they're getting tall, but right. I have not seen anywhere where there's any sign of blooms on them.
Yeah, you may see some blooms, and you may not, but don't be alarmed.
Okay.
And again, they'll bloom on new growth, so
okay.
you can also prune those back and keep them shaped, you know, late winter, early
late
spring.
Winter.
So,
okay.
yeah, just, and then sometimes, you know, they're not really fussy about fertile soils. You know, they're pretty tolerant of a lot of growing situations.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes if you ever want to try and give something an added boost, look for a fertilizer with a higher middle number.
Okay.
Something a little bit, you know, a little bit more phosphorus in it.
Okay.
And plenty of sun, and you should
it gets full sun. Both
you should be golden, and you'll be rewarded with those beautiful blooms.
Okay. I just wondered that, if maybe it has to go through another season or something before it blooms.
Yeah. Anytime you plant something for the first time, a year or two, you know, it's things getting acclimated and established, and don't always fret, you know, if it's not doing what you want to do. As long as you know it's getting that, you know, the right amount of sun and so forth, things will all come into play favorably.
Okay. Now, my oak leaf hydrangea.
Mm-hmm.
We got my good friend, when my brother died, she reserved one, sent it to the funeral home and reserved it for us.
Yeah.
We planted it. It was several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Used the starter food on it and everything, you know, when you first plant.
Okay.
The bud or the blooms on it have died.
Okay.
Is it okay to go ahead and trim those off? Should we trim them off?
Yeah, you can go ahead and deadhead those back to like a couple of leaves. And you can also leave them on if you choose to do so, but you can also deadhead those as well. And you're going to see a lot of that right now with most of the oak leaf hydrangeas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've already gone through their main bloom phase. And as we progress through the end of the summer, you know, they start to fade off and brown off.
Mm-hmm.
And just cut those out to keep things aesthetically pleasing and looking.
Mm-hmm.
And the real show will be starting here before long. You'll start seeing that nice, rich burgundy color coming about on the foliage as we get into the fall season.
Oh, okay.
So that's one of the attributes of the oak leaf hydrangea.
Mm-hmm.
Amongst that, in addition to that, once the foliage drops, then you get to admire the exfoliating bark as it ages over time.
Throughout
the winter months. A lot of seasonal interest with the
oak leaf. I was so happy when she sent that, and because that one in front of Jackson's is beautiful.
Oh, that's a snow queen. Yeah, that's been a long time. You have a good eye if you spotted that.
Yeah, that is beautiful. And I'm hoping this one gets to be, the same size and progress as well. I've named it after my brother Ronnie.
That's very nice, and that's a great remembrance for your brother.
Yep. All right. Well, you guys have a great weekend.
You do
the
same.
Thank you very much for your answers, and I love the show.
Thank you.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And Tony, we have Mary on the line from Alexandria. She's got some grasses growing through her plants. Hi, Mary. What do you got going on?
Well, we have a brick wall around our driveway, and we have phlox planted all along this hillside.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been there for probably 10 years. We've never had any problem. We've always used the white rock instead of mulch around them. And for some reason, this year, they've got grass growing up through them. Is there anything? We've tried the preen. That didn't do anything for it. Is there anything I can put on that without killing the phlox to get rid of that grass?
You know, I'm going to tell you about a product, but I'm going to be honest. I'm going to have to make sure. I'm going to have to look at the label. But there is a product that you can kill grassy weeds around and in amongst most of the plants that are labeled on the bottle, and it's called Over the Top.
Over the Top.
Over the Top, yes.
And where can you get that? Is it a garden store?
Yes, any garden store that carries Fertilume products. Now, I will tell you this, and when we go into a break, I'm going to look at the label. I always look at the label, and even before you buy that product, or anybody as far as that goes, if you're having some issues with grassy weeds growing up in and around some of your perennials and plants, see if that plant is listed as being where you're able to apply this product on or around that plant without killing it.
Okay.
But the active ingredient is called Post, and Over the Top from Fertilume is where I would start. Very effective. And I will also mention, it's not inexpensive, but don't let that deter you from making the purchase to do what you want to do.
Right, yeah, these have been there a long time, and they're beautiful.
A little bit goes a long way. So, you know, keep that in mind when you purchase it.
Okay, great. I appreciate it.
Where are you located?
In Alexandria, Kentucky.
I'm trying to think who over there would have Over the Top. You might try Highland Garden Center. You might try Fort Thomas Florist and Garden Center.
Okay.
And if not, call around to some garden centers and see if they have it on hand.
That'd be great. I appreciate your help.
All right. And follow up with this. And hang in there with us. When we go into a break, I'm going to check out. I'm going to see if I can find some information on the label with that to see if it's doable to apply over top of phlox.
So stay on the line, Mary. We're going to put you on hold, and we'll go into break right now so we can get that taken care of for you. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause when we come back.
We're going to help Mary with that problem and see what we can find out. And going to talk more gardening, Ernie.
Don't forget about coming up at 8 o'clock, our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats will be joining us. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Let's go back to Mary and help her out with that stuff growing in her flowers. Mary, thanks for hanging on.
Yeah. Mary, I did a little research, and there's so many plants, trees and shrubs that are on the label. What I did find out with phlox, that you can apply it with the paniculata variety, which is the upright growing phlox. I did not see subulata, but I'm going to get some information from you, and I'll research it a little deeper. So you have the creeping phlox, right? The low-growing. Yeah. So I did not see that on a label, but that does not mean anything. And let me get with Dave Taylor from Fertilum and just verify, just because I don't see it, that it's not effective. But I will get back with you. And if you hang on, I'll have John get your contact information.
Okay.
But the upright, the paniculatas, you can apply it on, but I just want to verify the subulata that you can, the creeping, but I don't see it. But that doesn't mean it's not on. There's a lot of listed plants that you can use it on. And that's over the top, again, just to let you know, from Fertilum.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And keep in mind, our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats are going to be joining us. Dave and Paul are going to be here at 8 o'clock. Going to get you ready for the season. And how about the Bengals? Went in their first preseason game last night, beating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Good to see everybody on the field and playing and the jungle alive again. Love this time of year.
Oh, I do too. And we have season tickets, and a friend of mine took the tickets last night, and it just, I'm like, man, I want to go.
But I have work to do.
I have work to do.
What's going on down at Jackson's?
You know, all kinds of stuff. Well, you know, we're getting ready for the fall season, like every other garden center and nursery throughout the tri-state area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also I want to encourage homeowners just to be a little patient, because, you know, there are some moms out there. Those have been forced, but we're still waiting for them to crack a little color and start developing some of those buds a little more before we start bringing them into the retail environment.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got in some new nursery stock yesterday, as a matter of fact. And like I told you, that all the garden centers are bringing in new nursery stock. I know that we're on one of the trucks that made a stop down at Baton's. I know they're bringing stuff in. We brought stuff in. And in particular, I'll tell you what was stunning amongst some of the things that was in our load were some of the bud Leas. Miss Molly, oh my gosh, she's not good looking. Miss Molly, Purple Haze, Blue Chip Junior. So, you know, there's still some beautiful stuff that's arriving the nurseries and garden centers weekly throughout the tri-state area. And, you know, we've had such favorable weather. Mm-hmm. Take advantage of it.
And this might be the perfect time to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center and refresh your containers.
Absolutely. We're just getting ready to turn the corner. And I like what I've been seeing with the weather here in the month of August.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it's a precursor to a really good, strong fall season, a favorable fall season from the standpoint where it's comfortable weather-wise. And now also is a great time to get with some of your garden centers and nurseries that do landscape installs, because they're going to really be busy this fall. That's the ideal time to put in and establish a landscape if you're looking to do that, especially if you just built a new home, mm-hmm. or if, in fact, you need to replace some things that are a little tired and worn. The fall is certainly the best time to do it.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have John on the line from Harrison, who's got English ivy growing around his maple tree. Hi, John. How bad of a situation is it?
Well, that's why I was calling. I was hoping you could tell me how bad it is. I have two 65-year-old hard maples mm-hmm. in our front yard that years ago someone had planted English ivy in a tree ring around the trees. Mm-hmm. And over the years, that English ivy has decided it wants to go to the sky. Oh. And it's completely surrounded, come up the trunk of the tree, and is now up in the canopy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's all green. The whole tree is now. So the question is that detrimental to the tree? And if so, how should I take care of
it? It can be, you know. So it's all, when you say it's all the way up into the canopy of it, it has to be pretty well established.
It is. It is.
And, you know, let me ask you the overall health of the tree. What have you noticed about this maple tree? Is it still leafing out? Is it still looking healthy?
Oh, absolutely.
Healthy?
Yeah, it's still beautiful. Both mm-hmm. both of them. There's two of them. They're side by side. And there's, yeah, they haven't had any problems with rot or right. limbs coming out of the trees. And right. they leaf out and they look great. It's just they look green from the top mm-hmm. of the tree to the dirt.
Mm-hmm. You know, at this point in time, as large as these maple trees are, as you're describing, and how established that the English ivy is, it's a lot further along than what I would like to see it. However, if things are, you know, coexisting favorably, uh-huh. and you're not seeing anything that's negative, you know, especially with the overall health of the tree, I would rather, for the most part, just allow things to coexist and move on from this point.
Okay.
Because they have thus far. However, I would also, if you don't mind, you might have an arborist take a look at it and see what they seem to think. Because okay. this is a situation. We know that in situations where things are hosting on a tree like that, it can be a problem. And then sometimes mm-hmm. it's not as much of a problem as we might think that it is. But if you were to cut that English ivy at the base as it starts its way up the tree,
uh-huh.
then, you know, you may start to, you know, you're severing that connection to survivability.
Right.
And, you know, then all of a sudden you have brown vines up in this tree, right?
Uh-huh.
And then as you start to peel those vines back, you could do more damage to the bark of that tree by gotcha. Ripping off the bark and opening it up and perhaps risking insects getting into the tree.
Okay.
So it's a real fine line to walk. Mm-hmm. And my suggestion would be is to contact an arborist just to make sure okay. the overall health of the tree is where it needs to be mm-hmm. and get their spin on it.
Okay.
And you know, when you do that, if you don't mind, would you follow up with us?
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
Do you have an ink pen or a pencil handy? I can give you a couple suggestions with arborists you might have. Take a look at it.
Actually, I'm driving right now.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you just tell me who it is, I'll – when I stop, I'll write those names down.
Yeah, here's just a couple. Dave Stang.
Okay.
Davy Tree. Madison Tree. And if need be, shoot us a Facebook message, and I'll put it sure. on there for you.
Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And
all right.
I really enjoy your show, guys.
Thank you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Joe on the line we want to get to before we go to break.
Mm-hmm.
He is in Fairfax. He's got a hydrangea bush that is not blooming. Hi, okay. Joe. How old's the hydrangea bush?
That's a good question, Ernie. I work for a demolition company, and we tore them out of a, you know, usually when I come up to a job site, mm-hmm. if they're going to be destroyed by the demolition, I'll kind of scout around, and I found these really beautiful hydrangea bushes.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, now, first of all, let me say good for you for doing that.
Well, I love my yard, and yeah. it's free plants, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
And so instead of them being destroyed by the building coming down, I dig them up. The job bosses all don't care. And I got these three nice hydrangea bushes. I dug them deep because we had got bobcats on the site, so I dug them down deep.
Mm-hmm.
And when I brought them home, I planted them like the next day. They were beautiful.
Okay.
Now, what I did was, this was probably last year.
Mm-hmm.
And when I replanted them, of course, they were in shock and that stuff. So mm-hmm. at the end of the season, I cut them down pretty good. Not okay. real bad, but okay. just enough. And this year, they're coming back. They're full. They're beautiful.
Okay.
But there's no flowers on them.
Do you remember, were they in flower or in bloom when you
they were
last year? Can you tell me a little bit about the bloom, what it looked like?
It was beautiful, full blue blooms on
okay,
them.
They were blue. Okay, so they're macrophyllous. And, you know, a lot of times what comes into play with macrophyllus, now you just move these guys too, so they're still trying to get adjusted to their new home. So just always keep that in mind.
Right.
And secondly, refrain from pruning those back in the fall. I'd rather see you do a little bit of pruning and shaping or cleaning out late winter, early spring with the macrophyllus.
Okay.
All right. And the other question I have for you, do they get any type of sunlight throughout course of the day?
Yeah. I got them in great spots. I mean, full, you know, not full sun, but I mean, they get a lot of sunlight. I'd say probably, I don't know, 7, maybe 8 hours of sunlight. I mean, they're really beautiful. They're full.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife just, we keep looking and there's no budding on them.
Okay. Now, another question that I have, were they quite large?
Yeah,
when you,
they were.
Okay. And were you, where it was that you got these plants from, was it an older established home? Had it been in the ground for a long time, maybe?
It was around a school. You know, we tore down a school. So they were well established.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is where I'm headed with this, and that's why I'm asking you a series of questions. It could be, now you had mentioned that you pruned those back in the fall.
Right.
If, in fact, that the hydrangeas that you took home were some of the older varieties that bloom on last year's growth, old wood, you could have perhaps pruned that out, those blooms, for the next season.
Okay.
And, you know, to give you a good example, one that comes to mind is a Nikko Blue hydrangea. They bloom on last year's growth. So if you prune those out in the fall, you pruned out the next following season's bloom buds.
That makes sense.
Now, if it's one of the newer varieties, you know, like the Endless Summer series where they bloom on last year's growth and this year's new growth, that tells me you're getting plenty of sun. It's just wait it out a little bit and see what happens.
Oh, they're beautiful.
So, you know, let's try this for this upcoming season going into the winter months.
Okay.
Do not prune it back.
Okay.
Okay. And let's see what happens, and then we'll talk about it next year, you know, when it comes time for those to show us a little bit of bloom.
Okay. Sounds good.
And
they're good and full.
What else I would like to see you do is fertilize them this fall after they drop their foliage. Okay?
Okay.
So when you fertilize, I want you to use Holly Tone.
Holly Tone.
Holly Tone, yes.
That's good to remember. I'm Christmassy.
There you go. So I want you to use Holly Tone, and then let's just see how things progress for next year. And let's hope that if they were older and established, they were the older varieties, and what indeed happened was you pruned out the bloom buds for the next season.
Okay. All right.
All right.
All right. I appreciate it, guys.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Much. You too, guys. Bye.
All right. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. Coming up at the 8 o'clock, we have our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats joining us. We'll be right back.
Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, in and around the house, is ready with your plans of the week.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Coming up in just a few minutes, going to have our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats join us. And right now we're going to talk a little bit about our plant of the week. And what are you going to surprise us with today, Tony?
I think this particular plant is starting to gain popularity again. And that is the Tillandsia, a.k.a. also known as the air plant.
I can honestly say I've never heard of the air plant.
No?
Does that have anything to do with the air bass guitar you were playing earlier this morning?
Yeah, well, that was the upright bass. Just like that. Tillandsias, they're also known as air plants. They are epiphytes, which means that they grow on perhaps another tree, a host, or some other object. And they get a lot of their nutrients and their moisture from the air, from the humidity. So, and you can see on our Facebook page, I posted some photographs of the air plant, the Tillandsias, and they're awesome. They're so unique. They're all different. And there's probably at least 400 to 600 different species of Tillandsias that are out there that are available. I don't know if they're all available for retail or to purchase, but it's incredible how large this family, this species is, the Tillandsia. And if you check out our Facebook page, we have a really nice display at the Garden Center. And as a matter of fact, Tim Porter, one of our staff members that just recently came on board with us this year, did a wonderful display with the tillandsias. And you can see that big toad right there, that fly-catching toad. That's the big concrete toad that's right by the display, guarding the tillandsias of all things. But if you check out our Facebook page, you can see where some of these, what some of these plants look like as we talk about them a little bit. And, you know, like I said, they're epiphytes, which means that they grow on another plant or tree, host or object of some sort. And they do not steal nutrients from their host, just to let you know. And just as we were talking to the gentleman just a moment ago about the ivy growing up as maple trees, you know, mm-hmm. we're talking about can you sever it and all that other good stuff. Sounds like everything's coexisting well enough there with his trees. But air plants, what's interesting about them as well is that they have these really small, tiny vessels located throughout their leaves called trichomes. And those trichomes, the purpose of those is to capture nutrients and moisture from the air. So a very unique plant, to say the least. And they're relatively easy to take care of. You know, tillandsias can live for several years and will even provide pups in a lot of situations to where you can carry on future generations for a number of years to come and get a lot of enjoyment from it. You know, kids and, you know, even the elderly, they like these kind of plants because they're relatively easy to take care of. And when you water an air plant, usually once a week is sufficient, you know, if you are keeping these indoors. And what I'll usually do is take one and just drop it into a bowl of water for about 10 minutes, pull it out, just let it dry, and then place it back to where I kept it. And sometimes in between that type of a watering, you can spritz it with a little water. And they're easy to take care of, to say the least. And if you go out to our website, or not our website, I'm sorry, our Facebook page, thank you, you can see where I've posted some of these. And the one that, I don't know if you're looking at it or not, Ernie.
I am.
It's gray in color, called Zero Graphica. Really cool and just really detailed. And these are easy to take care of. And I really like that one. I like the color of it. And then as we progress on, you can see the one that's blooming.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's called Xeronthus stricta. And that's another type of tillandsia. The bloom's in full bloom, that pink bloom with a little purple tinge on it. Really, really cool looking. So you got to be sure to get out there on our Facebook page and check these out. And if I say this one correctly, I'm not sure. Plagia tropica. Can you say that and use that in a sentence?
Nope.
I don't know how all these names come about. But this particular tillandsia, if you look at the tips of it, Ernie, you see that purple color?
Mm-hmm.
That isn't painted. That's the actual color that it's taken on the tips. Very, very interesting to say the least. And the other one that we did, it was called Capitata peach. That's another type of tillandsia, and it gets its name peach from the peach color that's on the plant itself. And very, very attractive. And if you're looking to do any types of tillandsias, check with some of your local garden centers and nurseries. They're very interesting. And like I said, kids love these. We've been selling these things like crazy. And, you know, they can, you know, the air plants, they're one of the largest genus in the bromeliad family. And do you know what a bromeliad is?
I do
know. Type of plant. And actually, you might even, you can buy one of these at your local grocery store if you think about it. You want to take a stab at it?
Celery.
No. The pineapple is a bromeliad.
Oh.
Yeah. So
that was going to be my next
So it's thing. In that whole family of plants. But check out the tillandsias, a.k.a. air plants. That's our plant of the week.
Very good. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats are here. We're going to pause, get them settled in. We come back, we're going to talk about some food. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And just after 8 o'clock, and our friends Paul and Dave from Bluegrass Quality Meats have joined us again this morning. Welcome back, guys.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
And again, you came bearing gifts. And I have to admit, our producer John didn't get any of the goodies that you left with us. I'm going to rat us out, Tony, before John does.
But I told you I left some in the refrigerator in the cantina. So.
That's a lie.
Little tail.
We were happy as could be at our house. You would have thought I gave my wife a bag of cash when you brought that stuff in. Fantastic. And tell us a little bit about this beef jerky first. You came in and brought us a little good bag jerky. Of beef jerky.
Well, beef jerky is really a convenient snack. I mean, it doesn't require any refrigeration. If you're traveling, you ride a motorcycle, you got to have that in your saddlebag.
Yeah.
I like to have one in the golf bag because you're out there and sometimes you get behind some guys that are a little slower.
Well, see, now you just said golf. Tony's a big golfer, and I just started playing again after my shoulder surgery. Now there's something else we can go do. Paul, do you play golf?
I used to, but unfortunately, after two back surgeries, I had to give it up.
Oh, wow. We do need a driver.
I can always do that. I'd be more than happy to drive for you.
And you can putt.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you can always putt. Pull out all the stops. Just do that caddy work.
Yeah.
Right? And then keep the bag full of jerky.
How's your addition and subtraction?
Very good.
That's not good.
Very good.
we don't want anybody adding up the strokes or anything like that. But tell us a little bit about this. This is great.
Well, that's an item we sell. It's a beef jerky. It's just a traditional flavor on it. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of spice to it. It's really nice texture, high quality. We don't sell it a lot of places, but you can get it at some Remke's, Jungle Gyms. Some of the independents have it.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, this one guy came by. We call him Jerky Bob. And his business was selling maps to gas stations.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the GPS.
Uh-huh.
Well, what's he going to do?
Right.
So he went from maps to snacks. And he found out about our beef jerky. And he stops in every couple of weeks and buys a bunch of it.
Wow.
He sells it to a location on every exit on 71 between the river and Sparta.
Fantastic.
I mean, and he goes into these little places and he stocks these little
point of purchase things.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. We're talking with David and Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats. We're always telling you the locally owned, independently operated is the best way to shop. And I'm very fortunate. Paul just invited us to come by and tour the facility, and it's right around the corner from my house. And we're going to take you up on that.
You better put stuff on lockdown, Paul.
They won't check us when we walk out, will they?
If you see Ernie come in the middle of summer with a big coat, he's up to something.
Yeah, the big bag.
I got them on now, those pants that have pockets on.
Yeah.
I'll be walking a little slower.
What else you have in there? Oops.
But let's get a little background information. Tell us a little bit about Bluegrass Quality Meats.
Well, as we said before, last time up, and once again, thanks for inviting us here.
Mm-hmm.
We're celebrating 150 years, family-owned. We are the fifth generation, my generation,
mm-hmm.
which is my brother's cousins. You know, there's quite a few Rices there. So we've been very blessed to make it 150 years and looking forward to get the sixth generation in there. So.
Fantastic. And, you know, the wonderful thing about your website, you have all the products listed. And then something you don't very often see is you have one section dedicated to recipes. A lot of times people will just say, here's our product. And you have an opportunity for your friends and family members who love your product to post and send you some recipes.
That's right. We have a contact us section where people can tell us their story related to Bluegrass Quality Meats. They can send in recipes if they want. We'll take a look at those, try those out, and maybe put them on there. We have quite a variety of recipes to take the creative level up for people. So they can say, hey, what else can I do with this product?
Sure.
I mean, we all know ham and cheese sandwich, but there's a lot of things you could do with ham. And there's the same thing with a metwurst. I mean, so we grill and we put them on a bun and tailgate all the time. The preseason just started last night for the Cincinnati Bengals. So there's other things you can do. I mean, you can make a quesadilla with a metwurst. You could do a flatbread pizza with metwurst. So however you want to change it up, it's just a matter of thinking a little bit about what else can I do with these proteins.
Well, I have to admit, my all-time favorite is that jalapeno met, and when that box showed up, it was the first thing gone. And we have this, I guess we should send this in. We call them jalapeno hogs in blankets. My wife came up with this idea where she knows I love them. And we were going to watch the football game. They were playing out of town. We used to go to this our civic club all the time, and everybody would bring a snack. So she got out a jalapeno Met and those crescent rolls and just put a little slice in it, rolled them up, baked them, and took them up, and they were gone in a flash.
Yeah.
And so now we started decorating them. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment with a little pepper jack cheese.
Oh.
And then roll it up and then bake it. So guess what I had yesterday? We went back up to the store, and I told Lisa, I said, you know, I really would like to have some of those because I was working a different shift, and I had to bring my lunch instead of going out. And that's what she fixed for me. I had them a couple of days in a row, and they were awesome. So I'm going to submit that.
I like it.
Jalapeno hogs in a blanket.
Awesome.
Sounds good. I'm getting hungry.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I'm always ready to eat.
I know you are. I've seen you in action.
150 years, we're talking with Paul and Dave from Bluegrass Quality Meats. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to tell you a little bit more about the company and kind of expand on that tailgate season because, as David mentioned, it's here, and we're going to get your bellies full. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats have joined us again. It's tailgating season, and as David pointed out, the Bengals started last night playing host to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tell us a little bit about the tailgate season. What kind of goodies are available?
Well, you know, tailgating is a great thing to do. I mean, it's about getting together with friends, family, just cheering on your favorite team. You do it all level. I mean, you know, some high schools going on here, actually tailgates for high school.
Sure.
Certainly there's the college scene and the NFL. So it's all around us. And we're going to be down at Longworth Hall this year. Pregame regular season.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to take, I don't know, three or four varieties down there, probably about 500, just hand out free brats or medals.
That's awesome.
To the Bengal fans and just be a part of that. Just kind of support the community. So
that is fantastic. Yeah,
it really is. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
After you.
Do you typically, like this time of year, high school's kicking off, college is kicking off, NFL's kicking off. Do you see a spike in the Mets and the brats and so forth, you know?
I think that our biggest season is Memorial Day. So that's
okay.
That's the biggest time is driven by retailer ads and people taking time off. And it's kind of the kickoff to summer. So that's the biggest thing. But what the tailgate does is really extends the season.
Sure it does.
And so we just continue at a pretty high level through the football season. And it's a great thing to do. Probably the best tailgate I ever saw was down in parking lot D before a Bengals game a few years ago. And some fans from Green Bay were there, and they had a table set up, and they had the most variety of toppings that you can imagine.
Wow.
I mean, they had mozzarella cheese, cheddar cheese, they had salsa, they had marinara sauce, they had all kinds of mustards and relishes. And, you know, tailgating is you know, kind of put that variety out there and let people do it the way they want it.
That's a great idea.
Keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it cold and keep your food safe. But really just put a variety out there and let people do it the way they like to do it and keep it casual. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I love that, and I see that there's a couple of different things listed on their website, bluegrassqualitymeats.com. And there's even a place where we could find Bluegrass Quality Meats. So you mentioned last time you were here that you supply a lot of other businesses with your product, and you also help a lot of charities and fundraisers and stuff. Where can our listeners find your product?
Well, at retail, pretty much every major retailer and most every independent. You know, brats and Mets everywhere. You know, really. Deli meat's the same thing. We're the largest selling ham in the market in the deli category. So your major retailers, your Kroger's, your Meijer's, Jungle Gyms, Walmart's, Remke's.
Make sure you're
down the line.
Yep. When you go grocery shopping, make sure Bluegrass Quality Meats is on that list.
Right.
And I heard a little rustling of plastic. Did you guys hear that? How's that beef jerky over there, John? I told you it wasn't going to last long.
So it's addictive. Unfortunately, when you open the bag, you think, well, yeah. I'll take one piece. And yeah. No, that's not how it works.
Yeah, one more and maybe one more. Yeah. Look, there's just a couple left. You know, as my mom would say when she'd fix a big meal, and if there were a couple of little things left, she'd go, sweetie, can't you just finish that for me, please? So that's where I get that is, well, if you open the bag, you might as well eat it all.
That's how I look at it. I'm with you, Ernie.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And you have the factory or the shop is in Crescent Springs. That's why it's very important. We're always just stressing this to buy and to shop locally. You can't get any more local than that.
Yeah, we're right in your backyard, and we're borderline Erlanger and Crescent Springs. Mm-hmm. We're right there, you know, right around the corner from where you live. We've been there since 1972. That's when our grandfather broke ground and built that building, moved out of Covington.
Mm-hmm.
So we've added on multiple times. If you ever drive by and you see the different elevations of the roof, that's every time we hit the
app. That's every addition. A little growth there.
A little growth.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We need to pause for a moment. We have David and Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats with us, and we'll be right back.
Hey, guys. My name is Jason Tilson, firefighter from Black Canyon, Arizona, and I love Firehouse Subs because the more subs they sell, the more they are able to help save lives in our communities. That's why the guys at Firehouse Subs are introducing the new $5 snack time combo. From 2 to 5 p.m. every day, you can get a small sub, chips, and a 22-ounce drink all for just $5. So now, even an afternoon snack can help save lives because a portion of every Firehouse Subs purchase goes towards providing life-saving equipment for first responders all across the country. Thanks, guys. It means a lot to all of us.
New $5 snack time combo at Firehouse Subs. 2 to 5 p.m. every day. Get a small sub, 22-ounce drink, and chips for just $5. But hurry, it's for a limited time only. Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen. Firehouse of America will donate 0.13% of your purchases in 2017 at all U.S. locations to the Firehouse Subs Public Safety Foundation with a minimum donation of $1 million. For full details, visit firehousesubs.com.
Hello, Cincinnati. GEICO presents things that'll make you feel good.
Cows have BFFs. It's true. They have one friend they go halvesies with on everything. Something else to make you feel good. GEICO's been offering great savings and service for over 75 years and has a 97% customer satisfaction rating. And that satisfying coverage isn't just for your car. The GEICO Insurance Agency can help you insure your home, apartment, and condo. And GEICO offers motorcycle, RV, and boat insurance. You know what else will make you feel good? Scientists discovered it snows on Mars. Maybe one day we'll make snow Martians. And GEICO is the second largest auto insurer in the country. So breathe easy. We've got your back. Plus, you might be able to save even more money because GEICO has local agents in your area who could help you find savings, like military or federal discounts. And GEICO offers emergency roadside service.
So Cincinnati, contact GEICO online, over the phone, or at your local office. You'll feel better after you do.
Choose to be a part of your patient's care team. Choose the nation's leading hospice provider. Choose VITAS Healthcare. Refer your hospice-appropriate patient today. Call 888-VITAS-80 or go to VITAS.com. That's VITAS.com.
JeffWellerNissan.com.
ANS Electric Supply is your complete commercial wholesale supplier, offering everything lighting and electrical, wire and wiring devices, conduit and enclosures, and everything in between. Need light bulbs? They're here. Incandescent, fluorescent, HID, and LED. Wire connectors, terminals, even tools. ANS Electric Supply has exactly what you need. ANS Electric is your fully stocked electric wholesaler. For all of your commercial and residential electric and lighting needs, choose ANS Electric Supply in Erlanger. Online at a-s-electric.com.
Jack says, this month, things are heating up. It's the $25,000 Summer Days giveaway at Jack's Cincinnati Casino. Every Friday and Saturday from 6 to 10 p.m., one winner every 15 minutes will win up to $25,000 in free play instantly. Earn entries all month playing your favorite machine or table game. $25,000, one winner every 15 minutes, only at Jack's Cincinnati Casino. See Club Jack for complete details. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we had David and Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats with us. We're talking about great food and tailgating. But before we get back to our conversation with them, Tony, we have Steve on the line from Glendale. He's got a four-year-old apple tree and something is nibbling on the leaves. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well.
Yes. And I don't know, it's been, as I notice every year over the, and this year it's gotten really worse, so the branches are, have literally none of the leaves on there except for the new growth at the top of the branch. And I don't know if, I should have, if there's a spray that would, might take care of this, something that's been nibbling on there and eating all the leaves off, but it's not affected by other tree that's,
right,
feet away that bad. Yeah.
Have you inspected the foliage or the branches closely? And did it happen rather quickly?
No, it's just kind of gradually.
Gradually?
Over,
okay.
Yeah. It's not like it was night and day. I just, it's kind of like got me looking and, you know, it's more, there's bee leaves and you just really don't notice it, you know,
right,
like I said, night and day. It's just kind of like all of a sudden you're like, well, where'd all the leaves go?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Couple things could be taking place. One, I don't know where you live. You know, this is kind of spotty. A lot of various areas throughout the tri-state have had an infestation of Japanese beetles, you know, various beetles. A lot of times, you know, you'll see that type of damage on apple trees and other trees as well. Also, what I noticed, especially with some crab apples, you know, and the apple trees, the fruiting trees, they fall in the same family.
Right.
Caterpillars. Just a couple of weeks ago, the yellow-necked caterpillar was wreaking havoc on a lot of trees and can decimate the foliage rather quickly. They they're in groupings and they'll just chew on a tree, and before you know it, it's like just as you stated, where did the foliage go?
Right.
So you might want to inspect it a little closer, and you may not even see that activity continuing as we speak. So that may be over and done with.
Yeah.
But throughout the course of the season, it's always a good idea. You know, unfortunately, I know a lot of people don't want to do this, but it's very hard to grow fruit and do it organically. So you might want to use some sprays such as Seven and so forth.
Okay, Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And only do that. Do never spray Seven when your fruit trees are in bloom because that can be detrimental to the bees.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. And so Seven would be good, and hopefully that would take care of the problem with the leaf blowage on growth on that.
Yeah, just keep an eye on things and inspect your trees closely throughout the season. And usually when you do that, you're on top of the game.
Okay. I have one other question, if I may. You talked about a product from Fruitloom, I think a week or so ago, that kills crabgrass.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could tell me the name of that product again.
Yes, that product is called Weed Out.
Weed Out?
Weed Out. Or you might also see it called Weed Out with Q. That was the old label. And the Q stands for quinclorac, and that is the active ingredient that will go after crabgrass.
Okay.
And and another little tip real quick, and we'll let you go, is you know, you can also look for another product called, it's got phenoxaprop in it, which is very good too, as well as, you know, getting rid of crabgrass. Late in the season, crabgrass can be a little difficult to get rid of, especially when we push above 85 degrees. Keep temperature in mind.
Okay.
And once we press that threshold, don't even spray it.
Okay.
It will eventually die out anyhow.
Okay.
Go after it with a pre-emergent next year.
Okay.
So stay in touch with us. Let us know how things go with the apple tree.
Okay, will do.
All right, thank you.
You.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have David and Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats with us this morning. And one of the things I mentioned a few minutes ago was about all the charitable work that you do or helping charities throughout the tri-state. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, we're 150 years old, and we've always been charitable, but this we've stepped it up a little bit this year and want to give back to the community that's helped us get to be here for 150 years. I've got a little list of some of the people that we've tried to help out. If I can go through
please,
them real
yeah.
quick. And I can't guarantee these are all this weekend. I know St. Joseph Festival in Crescent Springs is this weekend, and Ernie's going to be there tonight, he told
I
me.
I will so. Be.
And he said he's going to buy everybody a beer. They come up and say hi to him.
Hey, that's nice of you, Ernie.
Cincinnati Fatherhood Celebration at Talbert House, Sawyer Point will help them. Campbell County Football, it's not all schools. Dixie Heights Football, Summit Academy, Transitional School, Haley's Comet Fundraiser for Cystic Fibrosis, the Deli Skirt Game, Alzheimer's Foundation, so a lot just across the board. Even as far down as Louisville, we had some requests, David, for the veterans down there and donated product to
them. That's fantastic. So. It's very commendable, and a lot of people sometimes that has the success of Bluegrass Quality Meats and 150 years in business will sometimes focus more on just keeping the business alive. But that's awesome that you like to reach out and enjoy helping out others.
Yes, we do.
Nicely done.
And we also try to keep the business alive, Ernie.
Well, yeah. I thought that was David's job.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah.
He's rowing that boat, right?
It's a team effort.
Sure it is. Very nicely done. Do you often find yourself thinking, well, maybe we need to find a new product, or if something shows up, do you do some research there too and go, you know, maybe we could develop this?
We do. I mean, our business has basically been reinvented in the last 25 years. I mean, a lot of items we made more than that, of course, customers we had for 50 years. But there's a lot of items that we've brought on in the last 10 years or so that we didn't make before.
Really?
Right. We sell, like the Mets and the Brats, we added varieties. We had a Met and we had a Brat.
Yeah.
We didn't even have the two in the package together, the zebra pack, as some people call it.
Yeah, so, I see that.
I think we had a hot. We added a hotter than hot we didn't have before. We added a cheesy. We added the jalapeno cheese. So sometimes they're line extensions, not totally new inventions.
Mm-hmm.
So those types of things. We took our bacon, which is like the best bacon in the market.
Agreed.
We did a little twist. We made a double smoked thick slice on it. And so that has a whole new audience for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to grow business that way. We do a lot of private label business also. We pick up customers that we make product to their spec, or they buy our product under their label and sell it in new geographies beyond where we typically reach.
Mm-hmm.
We use the same technology that we use to make hams. We use the same technology to make turkey breast. We started selling turkey breast a few years ago. We had somebody making it for us. We said, we can make better turkey breast and at a lower cost. Let's do that ourselves. And so those are ways that we try to grow our business.
So when people's tastes change, you have to be on top of that as well, too. You know, for instance, you mentioned those new products, but people will often look at, you just mentioned turkey breast, where their diet interests have changed.
Right. There's a lot of interest in turkey. But across the board, we've had an ongoing effort to reduce sodium in our product over the last, I'd say, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll take an existing product and make some adjustments to that to make it more palatable. I think people are putting less salt in their food today than they were 10 years ago, and we want to have that match. We also want to have the match that fits here regionally. We're not a national company. We won't have to worry about what people like in California or Texas or New England. We want to have what people like around here. And that's the way we target our product, make it as good as we can, make it fit regionally, and then skew it to be more healthy as time goes on.
Agreed. Thank you. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We're talking with David and Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats, and you can get to their website, BluegrassQualityMeats.com. We do need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend David and Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats in with us, and we were just talking in the break, and very important, kids are back in school.
Right.
I know back in our day, we usually didn't go back until after Labor Day weekend, but it's important for moms to be prepared, and we wanted to touch base about some things you guys have to make a little bit easier for them.
Absolutely. Back to school lunch, you know, it's a big thing, and it's an opportunity to really allow your child to eat what they like. Mm-hmm. You know, if they go to school and they get the school meal and they don't like it, they throw it away. That's not doing the kid any good. So the best thing maybe is to give them a choice. If there's something on the menu they want to buy, mm-hmm. give them the money, let them buy that lunch that day.
Right.
But also let them have the opportunity to have a fresh made sandwich.
Sure.
And have a hand in. Maybe they can even help make their sandwich. And it's easier on mom and dad.
Even better.
But there's a lot of deli meats that we have in delis. We have, you know, hams. We have turkey breast, roast beef, corned beef, bologna, whatever the kid has. So it's a good idea to have two or three varieties at home,
mm-hmm.
depending on how many kids you have. And you can buy a slice or more, you know, so you can keep it all fresh.
Sure.
Couple of cheeses. And then just find out what your child likes. Make that sandwich that morning. Send it fresh with them. Throw some fruit in there.
Mm-hmm.
Apple off your apple tree, whatever you got sure. going on this fall.
Yeah, and, great to have that available.
Give them a variety. Keep it fresh.
Yep. Give them an opportunity when they come home from school, if you're not home yet and they're hungry.
Right.
You can go right to the refrigerator and get some fresh deli meats.
Yeah, we were talking in break, and Paul, what he does, he cooks a lot of bacon up at a time on a cookie sheet in the oven, 400 for 20, 25 minutes. But he'll take a couple of pounds, put it in a Ziploc after it's cooked in the refrigerator, and his girls can come home and just eat bacon strips like
sure.
like you're eating a jerky in here. So,
yeah, like
easy snack. Easy snack.
Our producer, John, just blazed through his gift pack of jerky, and that's a great idea. I was surprised when you said, Paul, that you like to cook it in the oven. I was assuming you used a broiler, but maybe that's some showing my age there. But you just bake it.
We just bake it. Line your cookie sheet with aluminum foil. Tony, you said sunny. You know, I don't know if it's shiny
side, dull
up.
Side. I've heard that five times.
I've had both.
Week or two.
I've had both. I can assure you, I've done it both ways, and it turns out the same each time.
I agree with you.
I can honestly say I've never heard of whether or not it was the right or the wrong side of aluminum foil. But now I got a good look. But
well, maybe we'll get a caller that can call us in and point us in the right direction. But anyway, take your cookie sheet, and it's really better to do it this way because you can make a lot of bacon, cook a lot of bacon at one time.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want the mess. You know, you put it on top of the stove top, you get splatter,
sure.
cook it in the oven at about 400 to 410 for 20 to 25 minutes. Line that sheet first with aluminum foil, makes the cleanup so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've cooked a lot of bacon at one time
right.
on one shot in 25 minutes, even yeah. if you have to put two sheets in there.
I got to tell you, that's going to help my wife tremendously with the great bacon raid coming up in September. And that's kind of where that started. She had been cooking bacon, and my friend Indian and several guys were over getting ready for a ride. And as she turned her back, and he snuck in and grabbed a handful of bacon, and that's when she turned around and said, "You got to quit raiding the kitchen for bacon." And that's where it stuck. Now she can prepare a lot of that in the oven and
right.
leave the oven door shut. Daggone it.
Yeah. When you get done cooking it, you may want to take a paper towel or something, get it out of there, put it on a plate on a paper towel, absorb some of the grease off mm-hmm. of it, bag it up in a Ziploc, put it in the fridge, and you're good to go.
David, you mentioned something, too, about how you introduced different cuts of bacon. What prompted that? I guess just the people's personal choices? Or
We had a retailer back some years ago called Biggs, mm-hmm. and a gentleman there wanted a bacon under his label, and he wanted something different than was in the market. So we came out with a thick slice double smoked bacon at the time, and that's where we started selling that at retail. Today, we're selling a lot of it through food service. So some restaurants and a company that actually goes on QVC and some other places does some things with that bacon and sells it over the internet. So.
And I did notice I'm on your website now, bluegrassqualitymeats.com, and on the ham it says naturally hardwood smoked.
That's right.
So if you can enlighten me just a little bit, what's the difference between a hardwood, or is there something unique about that?
Well, there's different smokes available. So we have a hardwood, which is a blend of woods,
mm-hmm.
Rather than just saying it's just hickory or just you know, right. what other wood that might be used. Apple wood's out there on some products.
Okay.
But we really like the recipe we have, so we stick with the smoke we have.
It's really, really good. And I'm looking forward to it, Tony. Paul invited us to come by and visit, and I certainly intend to do that. Again, the website is bluegrassqualitymeats.com. Got a list of their products. You can contact them, and I just love the recipe feature, where if you have one of your favorites, you can post a recipe, or if you're looking to do a little cooking, you can go on there and go, I'm going to try this today.
Yeah, we like to keep a variety out there, keep it interesting. Fresh ideas. I mean, stimulate creativity.
Sure. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And it's been fantastic having you guys here again. We still have a few more minutes to share some more information. We do want to take a break here with Paul and David from Bluegrass Quality Meats joining us. If you have a question, give us a call, but we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend David and Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats, and we've been talking a lot about food, and I just got a text from a friend of mine says, daggone you guys, now I'm hungry and I'm headed to the store. Before we get back to you guys, we have Jeff on the line from Fairfield. Tony, he's got bug damage on white pines. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
Good.
How old are the white pines?
I'd probably say close to 20, 25 years.
Okay.
They range from 12 inches to 15 in diameter.
Are they bagworms or is some other kind of worm or bug?
No, they're not bagworms. I don't see them. The only time I see them is when I cut down the trees and I see the perfect hole that's inside the trunk of the tree.
The carpenter?
Oh, are these holes like all in a row?
No, they're sporadic.
They're sporadic. You know, I was wondering if it might be woodpecker damage. So, it's really hard for me. Is there a way that you can send us a photograph of some of this damage so I can help you a little better versus just kind of guessing? I mean, not that I'm guessing, but I'd like to see it. I'm sorry?
Yeah, I can definitely do that.
Okay, do us a favor.
Yeah, this is all in the trunk, correct?
Yeah, well, it's not just the trunk, but that's where it's most prevalent. I see it all the way up through the trunk and on some of the larger limbs.
Yeah.
And I've heard that if we trim the bottom row of branches so it doesn't touch the ground, that will help. My yard backs up to a privacy hill in the subdivision.
Right.
I have probably a good 25, 30 different trees, and I've already lost four. I don't want to keep losing the rest of them because they tend to stay in a row.
Right.
So the trees that I've lost have all been in a row. So I want to try to prevent and stop the pattern from happening.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we could talk about a number of things, but really what gets white pines or the weevil, you know, so it could be a number of things going on. And if you're able to provide us a little bit of a photograph of some of these areas, it's going to be a lot easier to kind of diagnose it.
Okay.
But again, you know, white pines, too, have been on a decline in recent years. So a lot of it has to do with, you know, the types of soils that we have, very high, you know, and alkaline, you know, the pH level and so forth in the clay. But obviously you're having insect issues. And a lot of times, you know, that's why I was asking you if all those little holes are in a row. You know, usually that's a sap sucker. You'll see that type of damage. But it sounds like you might be having some weevil issues as well.
Okay. Yeah, I did notice when I was cutting down the last one, inside one of the branches was like a grub-sized, maybe like, I don't know, an inch long at max. It's like a fat waxworm is what it looked like inside one of the branches. So I'm not sure if that was just because the tree was already dead and it was trying to do what it needed to do or if it was the actual cause of the issue.
That could be part of the cause as well. So hang on. I'll get John to get some information from you.
Okay.
And I'll give you a call back a little bit later here this morning, and we'll talk about it some more.
Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. David and Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats been with us for a little bit, and we've been talking about food, and I just got another another post from a friend of mine said, oh, you guys are killing me. I'm starving. I'm going to go get something to eat. Tony had an interesting question about some of the restaurants that you used.
I was really wowed the last time you were with us here in the studio that the amount of dogs that you provide, you know, you're a local business providing all these hot dogs to other local chili parlor businesses. You know, for example, I love Gold Star. You know, there's Price Hill Chili. What was that number, Paul, you had mentioned to us last time you were here, the number of dogs you guys will do annually to supply these guys? It was incredible.
It's just a little south of 10 million
wow.
Coney dogs a year.
I've helped with some of those. I will say that. And I cannot mimic that dog that you buy from Gold Star and other places. You know, even though I do them at home, when you take those home, the cheese is melted just right. Everything's just there. And you know, a couple of bites and they're gone. It's like, oh, I need more.
There for a minute, I thought you were creating hot dogs at home when you said you were going to try to mimic the hot dog. I wanted to see that.
It's just that whole texture, the flair. You know, just how everything, that when you pick up a, if it's one, what do they call those, Coney crates?
Yes.
Oh, man, I'm a sucker for that stuff. And I love the hot sauce on it, too. It's just...
Now,
the amount of dogs, I was just south, you said south of 10 million?
Yeah.
Mm. Incredible.
And one of the restaurants, too, I believe it was Gold Star, has that Hot Met promo that
that's
they do.
That's a limited time offer they do occasionally. They got another one coming up with the stadium-style bratwurst and some sauerkraut and a variety of however you want it made.
Well, so, I am there for the
Oktoberfest, I guess, right?
Yeah, speaking of that, Oktoberfest is quickly approaching.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, there's got to be some great opportunities there for bluegrass quality meats.
Oh, there is. You know, the other day I was walking through a store, I saw these pretzel buns, and it's like, oh, wow, I got to get some of those.
Yeah.
I'm going to put some brats and mets on those and top it with sauerkraut. Paul and I were talking. He browns the sauerkraut in a skillet before he before he adds the brats or the mets. And so some brown mustard, and there you go.
Oh, see,
I'll get some of that German cheese, some Emmenthaler, you know, and grate that, put it over the top. Try to go as German as I can.
See, my wife cans and makes and cans sauerkraut, and I'm not a fan. When I was growing up, it was, and I'm sure you guys experienced this too, what was on the table is that was dinner. You either ate that or you went without. And I can remember walking home and getting close to the door and smelling sauerkraut and getting, oh, no, this is what I'm going to have to eat. And so I haven't really been a fan of it, but my wife and my mother and father-in-law love it. Our friend Sherry Burdett will come over, and my wife Lisa and her will spend 2 or 3 days making all this stuff and canning it. And now that you just said you brown it in a skillet, so you do that after it's already made, or do you make it?
No, it's already made. No,
already
made. Store bought.
See, because that little singe might help me get through that.
Yeah, maybe a little caraway seed too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, so I'm.
Tell your wife I'd be more than happy to try her sauerkraut.
Okay.
I'm
sure she'll be happy. I'm sure she'll be happy to share, since you're gonna help her with the great bacon raid coming up in September.
Well, I know too. If you like sauerkraut, you have to be putting that on your corned beef.
Oh yeah,
about that Reuben. Oh my gosh,
it's sacrilegious not to. Absolutely.
That kind of answers that, doesn't it?
Sauerkraut and brat is really good.
Yeah.
You know, at our little church festival in Walton, when we have it, that's one of the options you have. You know, sauerkraut and brat with a little mustard, you know, some brown mustard. And it's good.
Oh, yeah, spicy brown mustard. It all relates, Ernie.
Yeah. Right. Now, the browning it in the skillet makes it a little more interesting to me. I might be able to do it because I can't stand raw onions. Now, my dad used to eat a half a raw onion every day. And, but I'm not a fan of onions unless they're sauteed, either on a grill or in a pan or something. Then I love them. So maybe that's the key for me to go into the sauerkraut, right, Paul? I know my wife is listening, so I got no doubt that there's going to be an opportunity for me to try that.
I like onions all the way. It just raw, cooked, however, on the grill.
Yeah.
You got to have an onion.
Oh, it just used to make me cringe. David, he would just, mom would cut an onion in half and peel away the bunch. Yeah. And Dad would just pick it up and eat it like an apple. Nah, braver man than I. Well, just before we get out of here, let's make a little round table here. Is there anything else we might have missed that we want to bring up quickly? I know you guys are celebrating 150 years. And very charitable. You're always helping out organizations and charity events. And any new products maybe coming our way?
Not anything right now on the horizon.
All right.
Not anything new right now. But, yeah, we're a family-owned business, five generations, 150 years, local.
Locally owned and operated.
Meats are no MSG added, gluten-free. A lot of them are, you know, sodium's been reduced on them.
So make sure that you get to your local grocer and pick up Bluegrass Quality Meats. And go to bluegrassqualitymeats.com if you need some more information on their product and what to look for. But I got to be honest with you, everything that came out of the goodie box last time you were here got devoured, and it's awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming in again.
Thanks for having us in.
We'll look forward to that tour, and we'll be in touch soon. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local Home and Garden guys. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next week.